Hello, everyone, and welcome to Who Said You Have To, where we discuss how society dictates to us who we must be and how we must live our lives.
In this podcast, we will also help you find ways to choose the life you want to live with no fear or judgment.
My name is Tina Mason, and I am an emotional trauma intuitive and an expert in human communication, as well as how the human mind creates disease in the body. I am also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing, where we strive to create a space for every human to heal emotionally, spiritually, and physically with no fear and no judgment.
My name is Laura Schmidt, and I have been a nurse for 17 years. I am also a registered yoga teacher with 500 hours of training. My focus is teaching gentle yoga movements to help those who deal with chronic pain. My true passion, though, is aligning the chakras to create balance and harmony within. I am also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Oracle and the Warrior. Today, we have a very special, amazing guest who is willing to have a very open and honest conversation about surviving narcissistic abuse. And hello, beautiful lady.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hello.
We are honored to have you. So will you tell me, when you met this narcissist, were you aware that's what he was?
No, I had no idea that narcissist was even a word.
You didn't even
know.
No
idea.
Yeah. And your family, did they encourage you to be with this person?
I was living on the other side of the country at college, doing whatever. But
because you're amazing, will you tell us what that college was?
I went to Harvard.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make that point because I want people to understand that even extremely highly intelligent, successful humans fall prey to narcissism. And I want you to be aware of that as well.
Yes. Sometimes it's a point of judgment, like, why am I so dumb that I couldn't see it, you know? So there's some forgiveness there for sure.
But yeah. So you met this narcissist, and I'm going to just throw this out there as a big educated guess. I'm assuming there was some love bombing going on.
The situation was really, really interesting. I had been dating another boy that I really loved. We had a great relationship. It was lovely. And then I, just long story short, I was a test subject for a psychology study, and they had a lot of them, and it was a way to make money in college. And I ended up being a study for a test of an antidepressant. So I was a happy person on an antidepressant at the time that I met this person. And so I completely changed my life overnight and realized that this narcissistic person was on all sorts of pharmaceutical drugs, including antidepressants. And so for whatever reason, like, that vibrational match was there. Mm-hmm. And I became depressed when I started dating him, and he was pushing pharmaceuticals on me as a way to help me feel better. And I thought that's what I needed to do. So I was basically drugged into
instead of him saying, hey, maybe I am what's causing your unhappiness, here's some drugs so you don't know that I am creating your unhappiness.
So he did that our entire marriage. He was like, oh, you seem like you're depressed again. You should really go back and get some more antidepressants. And deep down, I was like, I'm depressed because I'm with somebody I don't even like.
Yeah.
But I couldn't even admit that to myself. So
right.
Was he of the same faith as you?
And that was a big thing, yes. It was that pressure that I have been taught since I was born, that you have to get married in the temple if you want to be saved, if you want to have an eternal family, blah, blah, blah. And this other kid I was dating was not Mormon. And that pressure was so big, that mind control was so big, that I found the first available dude that
went to that church. Yeah.
Must be good. If, you know, his brother was cool. I met it. His brother was in my class. Like, they're really smart. But I did not see all of the signs. I didn't even see it.
And you had children.
Yeah, we had children together immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were in Boston on 9/11, right after I got married. And it was like, oh, the world's falling apart. Let's have a baby, you know?
Yeah.
So I got pregnant right away.
That probably wasn't, I'm sure that's one of those things you look back and go, huh?
I was 21.
Yeah.
Pregnant my
you were
senior
still a,
year.
You were still a baby.
Yeah, I was 21, pregnant my senior year of Harvard and married.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what I want to talk about now is I want to look back, because obviously when you were in it, you didn't see warning signs. You didn't see what was going on. And I know, because I know you, I know that you hold a lot of self-judgment. You hold a lot of space in yourself of, I should have seen, I'm a smart person, all of that.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about this, because we're going to have a therapy session right here on air, okay?
Let's do this. Yes, please.
Because I want you to understand that you are exactly the exact personality that a narcissist is able to fool, because it has nothing to do with intellect. It has everything to do with being emotionally intelligent.
Yeah.
An emotionally intelligent person automatically wants to help others. We feel like, oh, I can fix that. I can fix that. And we forget that they still have the free will to not fix it.
Right.
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 So if we are looking back, what was, in looking back, what would have been your first sign that there was something seriously wrong, other than the fact that you knew you didn't love him, you were marrying him because religion told you that you must.
The yes. pressure.
Mm-hmm. The pressure. Mm-hmm. So, but tell me, what was, looking back, what was the first sign that there was something wrong?
Well, I mean, this was kind of an obvious one, and I'm like, huh. So he had this skin condition, in quotation marks, pain condition, where it's literally painful for him to wear clothing. So he was naked in bed on narcotics and lots of other things. And he barely even went to class. Like, I don't even know how he graduated. And I was like, oh, you poor thing. Wow, what a sad thing that you have. Like, you know, and I kind of went in with the sob story, and there's no name for what he has. There's no, you know, he's had all these tests, and anyway, down the road, when I finally looked at him, like, some doctors literally said, we think it's in your head. And he would just fight and scream and push and whatever, and to get whatever kind of drugs he could in his body so that he didn't have to check in with life. He wasn't even part of the world.
Right.
So I spent my whole marriage married to a naked man in bed on methadone, and I did everything. And so the signs were there to begin with, and I don't know what possessed me to think that I needed to marry somebody like that.
Well, religion did. Religion yeah. told you
and
that you did.
You're an empath as well.
There were plenty of other amazing Mormon dudes at Harvard that I could have married, but I picked the one that had the problems.
Yeah, and the one that you could fix.
That I could fix.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
When did the abuse begin?
It was really hard for me to see it. It was really hard for me to see it,
I know.
Because it was
subtle.
Very subtle.
And gradual.
Very sneaky and gradual. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
But in looking back, where do you feel the abuse began? I'm going to say from the day that you met. But where, in looking back, what do you see?
The term gaslighting, I literally learned like 2 years ago. Finally, I'm like, oh. But, you know, from the beginning, it was like, hey, you should do this. Or I see this for you. This is a good choice for you. You could come with me and do this. And there was a lot of like almost like whining and dining from his family, because they never thought he would marry anyone.
Oh.
They told me that later. And I'm like,
oh, thank you.
Are you freaking kidding me? Anyway, so.
And he's an attorney, correct?
He's an attorney. He's a genius attorney.
Well, he's a genius, period.
Yeah.
Because look at.
He can manipulate the shit out of anything.
There you go. So once you had children, were you expected to be the stay-at-home mom?
Yes. And there was no other choices.
There were, yeah. you weren't, there were no other options. You were to stay home yeah. and to care for the children.
Right. Right.
And did he care for the children at all? Like, did he do?
He did actually. It was nice. Like, he would change their diapers and take care of them. He was the oldest of seven children. And so
he had that.
Yeah. So that it wasn't like, a pure, like selfish type of person. But I never felt attracted to him. Our sex life was just horrific. Like, I would rather be a nun, you know, and that's just not who I am.
When did you realize that, did you ask for the divorce or did he?
He finally was so triggered. He's like, pointed his finger at me. He's like, I will never, ever divorce you. You have to choose it. And so he kind of pushed me in that direction. But he took, all of the money for an entire year until I decided to get a divorce from him.
Wow. And how were you, did he take the children with him when he took the money or did?
No, we were in the same house. I was just in another bedroom.
Got you.
He would, there's a couple times where he became physically forced himself into my room. He physically held me, pushed me a couple times. When he finally realized he was losing control over me, that's when he became physically violent.
Did he sexually assault you?
No.
During that time?
No.
Just the physical?
Uh-huh.
And your children, were they witness to this?
Yes. I mean, I think there was a yelling fight at one time where he was just throwing all he could in my face and the kids were there.
Yeah.
They were pretty young.
And so when you filed for divorce, because he did realize at that point that he was losing control of you, when you filed for a divorce, how did he respond?
He had been planning on, we had trouble for a few years and I kept trying to pull away and ask for help and get direction because I knew I wasn't happy. I knew that something was missing. I was so unhappy. So I was convinced by some therapists to go back in and try again. They were Mormon. So we moved to St. George and we tried to start new here. And I had no idea that he had been planning and hiding money, taking money. He borrowed $50,000 from his parents without telling me so that if we got a divorce, he would get the house. And he did. A 7-bedroom house that's worth $1 million now. He still lives in it. And I had nothing.
When you guys got divorced, there was not an equal division of property, was there?
No. Yeah, we had borrowed quite a bit of money from his parents, who were very wealthy. But he made it so complicated that we couldn't track it. It would have cost $100,000 for me to even track it. So he agreed to take the debt from his parents and give me nothing, pretty much. The whole thing was just cooked up. And at one point he said, I said, you're lying about all of this. You lied about taking money from your parents and you lied. Like, I called him out on it one time. He said, oh, no. I never lied. I just didn't tell you the whole truth. And I am playing a chess game and I'm 10 steps ahead of you. And wow. And what do you do? What do I do when I don't have...
You have no money.
No money. No law degree.
You have no law degree. You have no way to combat what he's done because you trusted him all yeah. those years. How long were you guys married?
14 years.
So you trusted him for 14 years. And now that you have no money, what did he do next? What else did he try to take from you?
So I was so lonely. There were a few times where I flirted with other men, which he found out about. He called all my siblings. He called my parents. He called his parents, his family, the stake president, the church leaders, everybody he could think about, and told them that I was cheating,
That you were having an affair.
So he, if he was losing control,
even though you
even though
weren't,
I wasn't,
you weren't actually having an affair.
I
yet.
Wasn't, but he said it like 23 times in a letter to our stake president, the church leader. Even the church leaders, after a while with working with them, they're not ever allowed to say, "You should get a divorce." They never say that. They said that to me. They saw through it all. They finally saw what he was doing.
But they didn't step up and help you.
No, they didn't really. They're not allowed to, really. Well, they support the masculine, the men. Because on the outside, it looks like he's doing everything he should. He plays the organ at church. He takes care of his kids. He stayed in the house while I left. Yes. I left the children.
Yes, but they saw the truth of it. Yeah. And they could have stepped in and helped you.
They helped as much as they could.
I disagree.
But
they helped as much as they could as far as what their church allows, but not as a
personal.
Human.
Right, yeah.
They're human. They could have helped more.
Right.
And they did not, because a narcissist is terrified of being found out.
Yeah.
And really, honestly, all they had to do was say, "Hey, here's the deal, dude. If you don't do right by your wife and kids, we're going to have to do a little something with your temple recommend here, you know,"
right.
And he would have not, that would have been enough.
He's never been reprimanded for anything. It's all been so much gaslighting that, like, I never even said anything about what he was doing because I was such a kind person. Yeah. Why would I do that?
And then he tried to take your children as well. Is that correct?
Yeah. He's still in the process of doing that.
How long has this been going on?
Years.
Years. How many? Like, not exact, but just like, well, give me like a ballpark. Are we talking 2 years, 10 years?
Originally, I agreed to 50-50. Mm-hmm. And with that, I got about $500 a month for child support since then. That's all.
Like total, you got $500?
$500
a month. Okay, got you.
Which is nothing.
And so they're with you half the time and with him half the time.
For four children, that's nothing. Anyway, so I remarried a second time, probably 5 years ago, and I was married to that man for 3 years. We had a lot of chemistry. It was lovely. This man ended up bringing drugs into my home with my knowledge. I admit to that. But because of that situation that happened, the first husband has done his utmost to make me look like a horrific parent in court, in documents. I have hundreds of papers of like spreadsheets and printing of my texts. Any text that I've ever written to him, he turns around and makes it look like I'm a bad parent.
So I'm just, for our audience.
The question you asked.
Hold on. For our audience, I just want to point out that Laura and I know our guest very well, and we actually know her two youngest children. And I will tell you, I am rarely impressed with people's parenting, and just I'm rarely impressed with the level of speaking to their children and having caring about their well-being and allowing them the free will to be who they choose to be. And you impress the hell out of me in that area. You are an excellent mother. Mm-hmm. You show so much love and concern for your children, and you are willing to go outside of the box to get them help. And I think that that is phenomenal.
And it's amazing. Yes.
Yeah. Thank
Very
you.
Strong.
Very well, beautiful. So it's interesting. I'm just kind of sitting with right now those hundreds of papers of in the court system that he has filed to make me look like a bad parent. I've started to believe it.
Of course.
The gaslighting is still happening.
Still present. Yes. It's, you're still allowing it. You're still allowing it.
Yeah. What do I do, though?
So you do exactly what you
do. Trust me, we know where you're coming from on this. My family, we've dealt with it. And the doubting of if you're a good parent, and how you beat yourself up. And then you try to start believing in it. And it couldn't be further from the truth in the case that we're dealing with and yours as well.
Thank you.
And anybody who is listening today, if you have any loving words of encouragement for Leanne, I'm sure that she would love to hear from you. But Leanne, would you tell me how your second marriage ended?
Yeah, so like I said, it was lovely to have the chemistry. It was amazing. We had a lot of fun together. I had no idea that this man had so much trauma that he had not dealt with. He put on a good face, seemed really happy and joyful. Life seemed okay, but there was something wrong and something off, and I couldn't put my finger on it.
But you just knew you could fix it.
Well, I wasn't trying to fix anything necessarily, but it was like sucking the life out of me, and I was sick a lot of the time, even though on the surface things looked great. So it took me a long time. And, you know, I had the feedback after the fact that this man was a chameleon. He kind of just told you what you wanted to hear. And I finally started to see. He promised a lot of things, but never quite delivered.
Did you discover narcissism as well in him, or just the bad traits?
I'm not so sure I would call him a narcissist. Mm-hmm. But finally we kind of were talking, like I felt like I needed space. I was drowning. I just couldn't like quite understand. I needed space, and he couldn't take it. He literally could not take the fact that I just wanted to go in another fucking room. So at one point, one night, he had court the next morning for his drug stuff. He was stressed out. I saw him like turn into a little boy whose mother was about to leave, which was his trauma. And I just wanted to read a book in the other room. I had this big book about the divine feminine. And I just wanted to leave. And it was about midnight. I was tired. I know we had stuff.
So you weren't even leaving the house. You just wanted to leave the room.
Just wanted to leave the room. All of a sudden, something took over his body. He became very violent. He ran across the room and held his arm against the door. He would not let me leave. He's really, really strong. He's not a tall person.
Well, and you're tiny.
I'm tiny. Mm-hmm. And he's literally been in street fights where he's choked out somebody twice his size. He's he's studied martial arts. He knows how to take down people. He's very strong. There's nothing I could do to get out of that room. I finally like stood back and I said something like, "You're just like a friend of ours who had also become violent." And there really was like an entity there,
right?
Like a very, very dark, scary entity that was all of a sudden in his eyes and in his body. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I screamed and he tackled me to the ground, put me in a chokehold, suffocated me repeatedly for hours. And I couldn't get away. And the worst thing was he chased me into a closet and choked me out when I was just trying to get away.
Did you think you were going to die?
It was a distinct possibility.
But what I want you to look at.
It was.
At the time, where did you fear that he would kill you?
Yeah. Yeah. I was afraid for my life.
Yeah.
I had no idea. And I couldn't fight back.
Yeah,
I had to just freeze.
Just let him do what he was going to do. Yeah. And how did you finally get away?
He tried to gaslight me the entire time, trying to make me think that it was my fault that I started the violence, that I was violent. Yeah. Well, the reason
I've met you.
Okay, here's the funny part. It's because I threw the book at him. I threw the book about divine feminine at him, and that was the violence. And it's just funny to me, like, anyway, the irony of that is funny. But finally, he started to come to, he started to see that he felt bad about what he had done, even though he was gaslighting me the whole time.
Telling you that it was your fault.
There was a box of razors somewhere, and he's like, "Well, I'm just going to kill myself." And I'm like, I hid the razors in the couch, like trying to save him. Like deep down, I kind of wanted him anyway.
So
he finally left the house. The next morning, he made me promise 1,000 times not to call the police, and I didn't. I was left alone in my house in absolute shock for hours by myself. thinking he could come back and kill me any moment.
Yeah.
And I didn't even call anybody. And the I was so afraid. I don't know. He made me promise and I kept my promise. But the most despicable thing beyond all that was he called the police and went to the police the next morning and tried to turn me in for violence.
Yeah, but weren't you the one with the bruising on your neck?
There was nothing really that they could see that time. But I gave my statement to the police, and I was in absolute shock. And anyway, we ended up dropping all the charges or whatever. But
that was his way of making sure.
Yeah. It was horrific.
It is horrific.
How did your ex-husband deal with him?
So my ex-husband found out about it all. And the first thing, I had nowhere to live. I had no money. I didn't have a job at the time. I couldn't go back home unless somebody was with me. My family made sure that I was safe. So I had to give my kids over to their narcissistic dad and say, please, can you take them? This horrific thing happened, and I have to go find a place to live now and take care of myself. Mm-hmm. So I lived with my parents for a little while, then I rented a one-room. But because of that whole thing, that snowball effect, now he's using that against me as a way to continue to have more
control
and ownership of the children. So the children are still with him more than half the time because of that event that happened.
So, Liam, you are here today. Because why?
So I have a lot of emotion surrounding this that I've been doing my best to take care of, to face. Like, I've done so much work on my soul. But a person that I know chose to take his life a few days ago. And the reasons he chose to do that were a lot of the reasons why my life has been hard. And so it brought that deep emotion out of, like, I'm just so tired. So tired of trying to survive in this world when things have been very difficult and have continued to be difficult. So I couldn't stop crying this morning. Because I was feeling what I needed to feel. Finally, it's coming out. And so I reached out for help.
And you're feeling it now for the first time, because throughout all of this, you just kept pushing it down and saying, I'll deal with it later.
You know, I felt as much as I could. And, you know, I've really dealt with a lot, but it comes out in layers.
It does. And you're absolutely correct. It does come out in layers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, survival kicks in. I've been in a state of fight or flight for most of my adult life.
Well, I suspect it was way before that.
Yes.
But
yes.
So, all right. What I would like to talk about now is I would like to talk about healing.
Sounds good.
Let's get it started.
I am very proud of you. I know that all of this was very hard for you to come out and to say, and especially live
on a video.
Especially live. And I applaud your strength.
Thank you.
Hopefully other people can witness the strength that she has and stuff we'll talk about and
yes,
be able to move on and heal.
And what you're not aware of, Leanne, Miss Thing right over there, Miss Laura, the reason she's been so quiet is because she's had a similar experience mm-hmm. with Emma's dad. So, mm-hmm.
which and he chose to take his life as well.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
So we'll just start with this. You ready?
Yes.
So, when you look back now and you look at all of these things, were you perfect? No, because you're human and flawed, just like everybody else, just like me, just like Laura. But that being said, did you do your best? Did yes. you, with your husband, did you love him and support him while he laid naked and drugged on the bed?
Yes.
Even though the intimacy with him was disgusting, you still had sex with him because I know you have kids. So,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And you stayed for 14 yeah. years.
Yeah.
So, again, maybe you weren't, nobody's perfect, but you tried.
Yeah, I did.
You tried. And you're feeling victimized over and over again because he is still, because the only thing he can do now, the only thing he can do is take your children. That's mm-hmm. all. That's the only control he has mm-hmm. over you now is to try and take your children.
Yes.
And I've met your children. I believe they'll make his life a living hell if he tries. Because they're very strong kids. They're very, very strong kids. And I think it is time to stop allowing him to victimize you. He gets a very disgusting, perverse pleasure from that.
Yeah, I know.
And it's time, I believe, to say the cards are going to lay where they lay.
Yeah.
It is time for you to be whoever it is you choose to be. You have the biggest heart, the kindest, loving person. I think the only person who outdoes you in love is Christy, and that's because she's like not from this world.
Yes. Now, let me tell you, I don't accept people in my life at the beginning.
She does not.
Do not.
She's very leery of
and
people.
Like Christy with you as well, it was like immediate. I knew there is beautiful soul inside of you.
Thank
which
you.
Which is what
I
matters.
So appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. You are a divinity this world has never seen, girl. And it is time to stand for you. You stood for your husband. You stood for your kids. You stood for your second husband who tried to kill you. It's time for you. And if you can't do it for yourself, let's do it for your children. Let's do it for our listeners.
Yes.
Can all of our listeners, let's get a round of applause there for Miss Leanne. And it's very important for you to start allowing yourself to not be so sad, to not be scared. These people have kept you from your mother to your first husband to your second husband. They've kept you in a space of being afraid.
Yeah.
Constant fear. And fear is a lie. And there is no peace, love, and joy in fear.
Right.
Right?
Right. It's this visceral feeling like it's in my cells. And I'm like, I am asking, like, please get it out of me.
We're going to shake them out of there.
So done.
So any listeners who are on here right now, if you would like to call up, I say call in because I'm old. If you would like to request to be a guest and just let's all have some love here. Let's have a little support. Love circle. Mm-hmm. Or if you have any comments that you would like to, any encouraging words you'd like to give to Leanne, I'm sure that she would greatly appreciate it. So the next thing we're going to go to, Miss Leanne. Mm-hmm. All right, in this healing. So I'm going to ask you, at this time, can you forgive yourself for being human and flawed like everyone else?
Yes.
Good job. Deep breath. Do you believe that you can help other people through surviving a narcissist?
Yes. I realize, though, I get to live it first and come out the other side victorious, right?
Yes.
If somebody came, not a whole spiel, but what advice would you give somebody that came to, if I came to you and had what was going on with you right now, what advice would you give that person?
I realize a lot of my mental space gets taken up by, I'm not going to lie, there's some hatred there. And you know, just like that, like, what the hell? Why is this still going on? I can't stand it. You know, this, there's a lot of, there's been some focus on why me? Will I ever be free? Like, there's a little bit of victim energy there. And so I feel like that is a big, big part of it is he's not up in my face all the time. Like, I mean, I do have to interact minimally, but the energy is what I'm allowing into my space.
And exactly.
So that's good what I need job. To work good on job. Clearing. Yes.
Yes. Good job. That word allowing, because mm-hmm. nobody can do anything to us, but we can allow them to. We can allow them into our space. Yeah. And sometimes we just need to remember how truly loved we are. And I had someone tell me one time before I found my own self-love, I had someone tell me, you're the most loved, unloved person I've ever met. And I was like, what in the hell does that mean? And they said to me, they said, well, you are so loved by everyone around you. And you're the only one who can't see that.
Yeah.
And so I look at you and I think mm-hmm. the same thing.
Same thing.
The people that I love and I trust and I admire, not just that I love you and I think that you're amazing and I see you as this dynamic human, but all of the people that I love and that I trust see you as this dynamic human. Right. And so I will call you you have the new honor of being the most loved unloved person that I know.
I see it clearly. I like, that's why I reached out today too, because I deep down I was like, I don't feel seen, I don't feel loved, I don't feel anything. I'm so like, I know that you guys can handle what I have today.
So what would it look like for you to be seen and to feel loved and to feel seen?
Well, let's take that. Yeah. One at a time. What does it look like to be seen?
I know I do have a lot of gifts.
You want to take a drink of your water?
Yeah. I have a lot of gifts. I have a lot to share. I've learned a lot over the years.
Do you want to tell our listeners what it is you do?
So I have a degree in English literature. I still hold state records for running. I ran in college. So I'm an athlete. I was a sponsored Spartan athlete for a while. But
get to the cool one.
Yeah.
So, get to the cool one.
So I'm a yoga teacher as well. I brought on yoga as a way to kind of recover from all the injuries I had from all the mm-hmm. other sports. Anyway, but I realized with all of that I had an ability to kind of bring people into a deep state of consciousness with my voice at the end of a yoga class. So I became a quantum hypnosis practitioner, which allows people to go into quantum realms, which means past lives, in between lives, future lives, meeting God, meeting your angels. You know, it's really, really incredible.
It is very incredible.
I love it. And I feel like I have been slogging through mud to try to get this off the ground because of the emotional density that I've been feeling. So,
and you are a beautiful artist as well.
And yeah. I paint and murals and yes. I paint and have quite a few visions of sacred geometry that I have been asked by my higher self to bring forward. And it's been hard to express when I feel like I have somebody breathing down my neck all the time. Yeah.
So you have this fully evolved, beautiful higher self, and you're struggling with your earthly.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Being human is messy business.
It's so beautiful to be in that higher. We got to bring it down. So back to, what does it look like for you to say, I feel seen?
Thank you. I want to be able to share. I want to help people's lives with the gifts that I've been given to make the world a better place, a more beautiful place. And to be honored for that. I think we all want to be honored for
absolutely
for what we have to give.
So I will and tell you, you give that to me already just being in your presence.
Oh, thank you.
Ditto.
Ditto. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate
and
that.
And we, as you already know, because we agitate you about it all the time, we would take you as a practitioner in a heartbeat.
Thank you.
So, you know, when we get the new space finished, because Leanne keeps...
I'll be like...
Yeah. Well, Leanne told me that she said, I just want a little closet. I just want a little closet. And so I'm thinking we just build her a closet.
We'll build her a little closet.
We'll build her a closet in the new space.
So that acknowledgement. So what about to be feel loved from another? Or are you really talking about self-love?
Well, that's the root of it, really, is that self-love. Like, I think going back, like forgiveness of myself for allowing so much difficulty for my adult life and beyond, and forgive myself for, like, I feel like I'm just barely getting started and I'm middle-aged, you know?
Oh girl. Don't even. Yeah. I was 48 years old.
And
do I not 40, go there.
48 now, and we're just like starting to pedal that bicycle. Here we go.
We still got training wheels on.
We've been going
so
uphill.
Don't even. Because you're like, what, 21, 22? Like, you're just a baby.
Almost 42.
Oh, heaven forbid. You're 10 years younger and started way sooner than I ever did. So we're not going to go there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, but yeah, there's a level of self-love that I'm working on that needs to be there.
How about I choose it to be there? Yeah. When we say the words like need and want, we're telling our brain it's a chore.
It
we
feels say, like I a choose. Fucking chore.
Well, but so how about if we try it this way? I choose self-love.
I choose self-love.
See how much lighter that feels?
Yeah.
Because it tells our brain that it's a desire, not a chore. So we will automatically create energy to pull it towards us. Instead of I want, I need, I must, creates energy to push it away from us.
Right.
So words are vital.
So is the lack of self-love because of choices you made in the past that you're not forgiving yourself? Or what's the connection you're making there?
I think it's a deeper pattern of, and this will go back to my very young childhood, of my needs and emotions were completely squashed in favor of somebody else's drama and trauma. And so I realize I still do it. People pleasing, whatever you want will make me happy. And there's a level of like okayness about that. But deep down, I don't even know what I want. And it's super frustrating.
But you do. That's not true.
Well, consciously, I'm working on, like, I'm exhausted, whatever. I say all these things. And then I'm like, what do you want to do right now? I don't know.
Okay. So let me, let's break this down. Barney style.
Break it down now.
But you've already said what you want. If it was a perfect world where you didn't have to worry about money, you didn't have to worry about paying bills, you didn't have to worry about judgment or anything else, right? In a perfect world, you would want to do something where you could heal people, where you could help people, where you could speak and give your knowledge, and it would help people.
Yeah.
So, isn't that who you want to be?
I think so.
So then once we get to that level of, okay, this is what I want, this is who I want to be, then we start making a plan.
That's when you start pedaling.
Right. That's when you start, that's what we did. That's when you start pedaling. And
there's a level of me, I don't know if it's self-sabotage.
Yes.
Like I've never.
Without even knowing the sentence.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Like I've never done this before. What do? I don't know. I guess I'm just going to sit here until something comes to me. I guess I'll keep people pleasing. And, you know,
How's that been working out? Exactly. And
we need to practice the no game with Liam.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, that's a good idea.
That has been told to me by another friend that you met the other day, who she's like, no is your favorite word now. Like, okay,
no
I can
game.
Do this.
With no explanation either. It's just no.
Yeah.
I think we talked about it on one of our episodes.
Yeah, so Leanne, am I pretty?
Yes.
You're supposed to say no.
No. I want to please you.
I love you. Leanne, do you like me?
Yes.
Okay, you're supposed to say no.
I'm sorry. It is so hard
ask
for me
her,
to
ask
say
her for
no.
Something that's not personal.
Okay.
Like, Leanne,
can you hand me that Pepsi?
No.
Leanne, can I borrow your car?
No.
Leanne, do you love me?
No.
Good one. No, that's good.
Question mark.
Yes, I felt the question mark.
Leanne, am I of value?
No. So hard for me.
You went personal again on her.
I know. I can't. Well, I can't lie.
It's easy.
I can't lie.
It's easy to say no to passing the soda.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
But I'm for a people pleaser, though. They will go out of their way. And I know it's a can of soda, but like, for example, the car.
Yeah.
Which I don't let people really borrow my car. And that would be all. Even then, it would be hard for me to say no.
I have a friend. I have a friend who's borrowing my second car because
she was in an accident. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to help her.
Yeah, yeah. I wrecked my car. Could I borrow yours?
No.
Sure.
So, since we know, I feel like I'm a better human when I am in your space.
Thank you.
And I'm a pretty cool cat.
Yeah, you are.
And you can play the flute.
And you can play the flute.
Or was it called a flute?
Yes.
Okay. When we went that bonfire, is that a flute? Okay.
Yes.
You are so talented, woman.
I play the tuba as well.
We'll pass on the tuba.
I'll pass on the tuba. That's probably a little too loud for me. So you are a beautiful, amazing human. And my girls who like no one love you. It's really strange to me. They like you, Laura, and Christy.
That makes sense.
All aspects. But you are such a phenomenal human. And I am honored to call you my friend. And I know that there's nothing you can't do. We're going to be wrapping this up here in a few minutes. If anybody has a desire to call in and just say hello and give Leanne a little bit of love, reach down in there. Don't be afraid. You sound fabulous, I promise.
Or share how you healed or how you recovered.
Yeah, maybe give her some encouragement on ways.
Even legal encouragement, if anybody knows of any legal.
Yeah, if there's a lawyer out there.
How to work this, because I know that's one of your biggest fears is the children, what's going to happen with them.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is like I'm so worn down with it. I want to go live on a desert island by myself. That sounds amazing, but that would mean that I would abandon my children. You know what I mean? Like there's this,
it's just the desire of peace.
I just want some peace.
Yeah. And you know what? Totally get that one.
Yeah.
Totally get that. I have my little, you've been to my house. So I have my little outside space there with my heater when it's cold, my swamp cooler when it's hot, and my dragon fountain because I have to have that sound of running water, you know? And that's my space. And there's a rule at my house. Laura laughs. So what's the rule at my house, Laura?
Don't talk to Tina when she wakes up.
First thing in the morning, nobody speaks to me until like I speak to them because it is, that's my space. And I have taken that for myself. And at first I felt like a jerk, but then I realized how vital it was. I mean, when you look at what I do for a living, I have to have that space. Anybody who does energy healing, they have to have that space. Laura takes her space here. She gets here before I do. And she takes her space here and has that alone time and works on.
Yeah, because I can't even go to the bathroom without somebody like.
At
like
home.
There's an alarm.
At home,
not. No. There's like an alarm. Like mom's not in the room. Mom, like I just said.
Either that
down.
Or they smell. You know, smell like the fumes. And she's like, they're like, mother's taking a moment for herself. Mother.
Even the dog now.
Oh yeah. You see the little nose.
Yes.
A little underneath.
And they got to lay on the mat next to me.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Constantly sharing energy space with somebody. So yeah, I take my time here.
Yeah. Yeah. I need it.
And
I
that's
really do.
Something that both Laura and I had to learn.
Yeah.
That it is vital for us to, for our own self-care. Self-care is not selfish.
Yes.
Self-care is not selfish.
That was modeled to me, but the opposite of that from my parent. I'm still the model of like never caring for herself. To the point of illness, you know, and I can't be selfish.
And you want to emulate that?
No, I don't. But as that being the only role model that I had mm-hmm. as a woman.
Come to my house first thing in the morning and try and talk to me. I'll show you a different way.
Right. So, yeah, I'm learning that I do
imagine when Christy comes and stays with me, I want you to imagine her first thing in the morning coming out and, you know, her
all going, bubbly and
all bubbly and like, you know, and I was like, Christy, obviously nobody told you the rules. She's like, oh, I thought they were joking.
I love your boundaries on that.
And Christy is like the kindest human on this entire earth. Leanne's number two. But anyway, so she was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything. And then like 30 seconds she just couldn't help it. She was like, what kind of coffee are you drinking? And I'm like, okay, Christy, not playing.
Enjoy like, the sounds of silence.
Like you, I can get duct tape or you can go inside. I don't care which one. And she's like, no. I'm going to be totally like, I'm good. And like 30 seconds later, she was like, just a quick thing. And I'm like, inside now, go inside.
So what are you doing now for self-care?
Now that we've had this conversation, because right. I know you weren't doing anything.
Well, you did hiking and.
Yeah, it kind of comes and goes. Like, I feel like I try to fit it in, but then the whole survival, like, oh shit, I got to make money. Like, I don't have time for that this morning, so I'm going to go off to my job to make some dollars to, like, try to keep my children to, you know what I mean? It's like this constant, like, how do I even find time for myself at the same time of just trying to survive? That's the bit of the story that I was told as well. So anyway, this morning I got up and I was just feeling my feelings, just, you know, a little teary.
Because we do have to process.
Yeah. So I sat on the couch with the blanket. My favorite blanket, and there's this tiny little chihuahua. We're actually babysitting a second one.
Oh, wow.
It sat on my lap the whole time. It is a very special needs chihuahua. It is so cute.
I'm pretty sure all chihuahuas are special needs. I'm just saying.
But I just sat there. I just sat there, and I listened to one of my very favorite meditations, and I drank my coffee, and I listened to this beautiful meditation, and I didn't do anything else for an hour, and it felt so good. I needed that, like, I just need to, like, well, what I'm doing is I'm practicing getting the fight or flight out of my body. Mm-hmm. Is it okay? Are you safe to sit still?
Yeah.
Because I'm really good at being busy, but mm-hmm. when you sit still, what will come through? And so I've been practicing that, but I definitely desire a lot more.
How about if you say, I choose?
I choose. I'm choosing.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, well, Leanne, feels better.
Thank you so much for being on here with us today. Thank you for just your open, honest, beautiful spirit. And we love you.
I honor you both. You're amazing friends. Thank you.
We love you.
Society has screamed from the day we were born, we are not rich enough, thin enough, tall enough, attractive enough, charming enough, that we are simply not enough. But who decides what society's opinion of enough is? Why do we plan our lives based on society's opinions instead of our own?
What makes us create misery and heartbreak in our own lives, killing ourselves to be what society calls, quote, enough, even if it is not who we want to be? When did it become more acceptable to be what society would respect instead of the person that we would respect?
And who said we had to limit ourselves to stopping at just enough?
How many times have you been told to dim your light because it was shining too brightly in someone else's eyes?
My name is Laura Schmidt, and I have been a nurse for 17 years. I'm also a registered yoga teacher with 500 hours of training. My focus is teaching gentle yoga movements through private classes to help those who deal with chronic pain. My true passion is aligning the chakras to create balance and harmony within. I'm also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing.
My name is Tina Mason, and I am an emotional trauma intuitive. I am also an expert in human communication, as well as how the human mind creates disease in the body. I am also co-owner and co-founder of Free Will Healing, where we strive to create a space for every human to heal emotionally, spiritually, and physically with no fear and no judgment.
In this podcast, we will discuss different ways all humans have allowed society to dictate to us who we should be, what we should be allowed or not allowed to achieve, and what is, quote, normal.
More importantly, this podcast will teach you to allow yourself to choose to create no limitations on what you can be, obtain, or accomplish, allowing your life to be your masterpiece.
So grab a pair of sunglasses.
Because together, we are going to increase your wattage to whatever you choose it to be.
With no fear and no judgment.